two fingers on my left hand, pretty solid, almost solid.
Snow machiners from around the state and Canada raced against each other and the extreme cold in the weekend's Alcan 200. Results coming up. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Tara Bicknell. That story and more next. Frigid temperatures and sparse snow set a rough track for the 42nd annual Alcan 200, the longest snow machine road race on the continent. The ride took place on Saturday outside of Haines, Alaska, where racers from around the state and Canada competed. The Alcan 200 racetrack starts at the Canada-U.S. border outside of Haines, Alaska, and runs through British Columbia before turning back at Des Dieux Lodge in the Yukon Territory, totaling 155 miles of competitive, high-speed winter racing. But this year's conditions made the ride a little more difficult to stand than in recent years. Race organizer Karen Hess at the awards banquet Saturday night estimated at least 10 miles of snowless pavement along the course.
There were guys who actually were picked up and put on the lowboy that burned up their skis just from the friction. Skis just melted. I mean, just because you have skis on your sled, you still need to. You put them on a highway and you got metal under them, which is carbides, you get friction. Pretty soon you just got sparks and it just gets so hot it melts the skis.
Temperatures surpassed 20 below zero Fahrenheit, causing some riders to nearly become frostbitten. It was the reason behind at least one racer scratching before the race ended.
This is the coldest we've had in several years. These guys had wind conditions up on the pass. At 75 mile, the wind was blowing across the highway so bad that, I mean, it was sometimes just, I mean, nothing but just snow blowing across the highway.
And now first overall, Jared Davey from Whitehorse.
However, the overall winner, Jared Davey, traveled to the race from Whitehorse, where it was minus 40 the day before the race.
This is the least amount of work and the most fun and the most scared I've ever been. And I'd like to thank my sponsors.
Well, I froze my fingertips. My body was warm. I was really good. But I froze my two fingers on my left hand, pretty solid, almost solid. And, it was really bad. I seen a couple of racers freeze their fingers solid. And, you deal with it. You warm them up, you figure a better way to keep them warm on the run back. It was scary. I was scared. I was really nervous about my fingers more than anything.
This is Davey's first overall win, but not his first Alcan 200. He first raced it 16 years ago. He's placed second at least three times and third a couple times more. But he says a win after all this time feels much different.
Really good. Yeah. I got some pretty heavy sponsors this year, like guys that gave me the snowmobile, gave me the money to race, and it was a big deal. You know, sponsors give you the opportunity to win. They give you the cash, but the team allows you to win because they actually are the guys that are backing you and helping you do everything. It's a huge deal.
Davey's time overall was 1 hour, 33 minutes, and 28 seconds. The top average speed came in at 99.5 miles per hour this year, lower than in past years. Also down this year was the number of racers. Organizer Hess with the Chilkat Snowburners says it's one of the lowest numbers in recent years. Last year, 42 racers registered. This year, there were 25.
We had 21 that came in at Des Dieux, and let's see, 18 that took off. Three of them scratched at Des Dieux. Just mechanical problems.
13 finished the race. The lower number of entrants was a shared concern among organizers who say they'll try to reach out to some of the bigger sponsors in Whitehorse to drive ridership next year. Wade Itschenko is race director and spoke at Saturday's awards ceremony.
I think it's time to get back to more entries in some of the smaller classes. There is a record to be broken out there for the best overall time, and it will be broken probably next year if the conditions are good. But anyway, I just wanted to get up there and let everybody know and get everybody and their kids and their friends and their best friends to come back. And let's start seeing 40 and 50 people entering this race again.
Second place overall went to Chris Brooks of Haines, Alaska, and third place to Greg Peaty of North Pole, Alaska. The new Experienced Award, honoring the oldest rider and machine, went to Gene Bloom of Fairbanks, who also took home the Jeff Peaty Memorial Oldest Sled Award. The trophy is named for the longtime racer who died in an Alcan 200 racing accident 2 years ago. The banquet crowd voted to give the top mechanics award to the PD girls, made up of Jeff's wife and sisters. Among the most vocal critics of Sea Alaska's land selection bill are conservation groups. They point to past logging practices by the Regional Native Corporation and others, which have removed large stands of trees from Southeast Alaska, and say the region can't support much more in the future. Most say they want Sea Alaska to get its land entitlement, but that it should be within the boundaries set by the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. Sea Alaska officials defend the corporation's environmental record and say the bill will allow them to be an even better steward of the forest. Casey Kelly has more in part three of our six-part series on the Sea Alaska legislation.
If you want to see firsthand the effect of Sea Alaska's past logging practices, head to Huna. Heavy logging by the Native Corporation in the 1980s and 90s removed large stands of timber surrounding the Tlingit village of about 800 people on Chichagof Island. Today, Sea Alaska is attempting to reestablish some of those forests through its silviculture program. As Sea Alaska Forest Manager Brian Kleinhentz steers a pickup truck down a Forest Service road near Huna, he points out spruce trees planted about 7 years ago in an area once clear-cut.
The first couple years, they take a little while to get going because they kind of, you know, need to establish a root system, but now they're really cranking along, and we're going to have some beautiful spruce forests here in Huna.
We're the only people that plant trees in Southeast Alaska, including the Forest Service.
At Sea Alaska headquarters in Juneau, Executive Vice President Rick Harris defends the corporation's environmental record. He points to the fact that logging on private land in Alaska is regulated under the State Forest Practices Act.
I could bring you downstairs and probably show you a stack of research and field study investigations that's probably about 6 feet tall, all of which is monitoring the effectiveness of that act to ensure that fish habitat and water quality is protected.
Buck Lindekugel, grassroots attorney for the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council, has heard Sea Alaska's arguments before and isn't buying them.
There are different standards that protect fish and wildlife on all these lands. The least protective are on private lands. The most protective on national forest lands.
Lindekugel says the silviculture, essentially tree farming being practiced by Sea Alaska, is the science of cutting trees to the bone.
They may be really good at it, whatever that means, but for our purposes, if you can't support the way of life that has supported this region for years, and that's dependent on healthy fish and wildlife populations, then whatever your practices are the wrong practices.
And the Alaska Forest Practices Act that Harris says protects streams and wildlife habitat? Lindekugel says it's not as effective as Sea Alaska says it is. For one thing, it includes a 66-foot variable buffer between logging activity and salmon streams, compared to a 100-foot minimum barrier on national forest lands.
Which means that they can cut the biggest old growth that's along the stream. And that close, you know, the science says you're going to have long-term impacts, adverse impacts to salmon habitat.
Then there's the proximity of the land Sea Alaska wants to select to areas that have been heavily logged in the past. Logging in the Tongass National Forest is managed under a Forest Service land management plan. Conservationists argue that removing large sections of the forest will impact the plan's overall effectiveness. Eric Myers is policy director for Audubon Alaska.
On Prince of Wales Island in particular, it's important to understand that that particular island ecosystem has experienced so much logging that any incremental logging is getting to the point where it's a serious concern to the ecological integrity of the region.
Audubon, in conjunction with the Nature Conservancy, published a report last March comparing the ecological value of the land Sea Alaska wants to select to the Tongass National Forest as a whole. In other words, the importance of those lands for things like old growth and fish and wildlife habitat. According to the report, the lands Sea Alaska has identified for selection have an ecological value 10 times the Tongass-wide average. Meyer says that includes a significant amount of karst forest.
Karst is a specific feature of limestone geology characterized by caves and subsurface drainage systems that provide for well-drained soils and very large trees, but these same thin soils are very sensitive to erosion. So there's a variety of concerns about the ecological impacts that would be associated with large-scale intensive logging.
Sea Alaska's Harris says the Audubon report is narrowly focused and doesn't take into account other factors the corporation considered in trying to choose land outside the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act boundaries.
For example, we have selection rights in municipal watersheds. And I think that any community would prefer that a municipal watershed remain in public ownership. The Audubon report did not consider that at all.
Sea Alaska officials met privately last year with members of the conservation community to see if they could reach a compromise. Even though they couldn't strike a deal, Harris says the talks resulted in some proposed changes to the legislation. Myers and Linda Kugel say they'd like Sea Alaska to get its land entitlement, but not in the way laid out in current legislation. Myers notes that the ANCSA boundaries were set with the cooperation of Sea Alaska and environmentalists, and he says that's all the groups are asking for today.
The concern is primarily that the Sea Alaska proposal, in whatever form it might advance, be balanced with other kinds of considerations, including conservation designations, to ensure that the integrity of the ecological integrity of the forest is maintained.
For now, it seems the only thing everyone agrees upon is that there's a lot more work to do. That could come after a new round of town meetings and bill rewrites expected this year. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
Other reports in our series will look at the bill's futures and sacred sites and its chances in Congress. You can check out earlier reports on our website, khns.org. I'm Tara Bicknell for KHNS.